Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of Chuck Oliver Show, and what a great lineup on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Started with Dave Bartu from CFB Matrix, and he always spends a couple of segments with us. We're talking asset allocation, whether it's hours or money or draft picks. He does a great job with it. So thank you, Dave Bartu from CFB Matrix, coming on. About 15 from now, Georgia Tech has wrapped up their spring practice. Had a game on Saturday, a bunch of yards and such. And so, and it wasn't just Haynes King. Another one of the quarterbacks decided he was going to show out. So Kelly Quinlan will join us from Jackets Online. It's a Rivals effort. So always love Kelly visiting. And Shea Dixon on three. Garrett Nussmeier threw a couple of scores in the spring game. If you care about things like that, I do. Only because he was healthy and he functioned in the offense and it's slightly different and he's still comfortable and all of that stuff. So that's where I sit when it comes to LSU and their spring. It's like the offense is going to work. The offense is going to be just fine. The defense, we'd mentioned before that it's so blatant that, like, Brian Kelly is saying what a lot of schools have already pivoted towards. Brian Kelly's just saying it flat out. And maybe he's being it's marketing. We need D-tackles and D-tackles only. We are D-tackle central. It was the LSU head baseball coach who, gosh, did he wrap up the super, maybe the SEC tournament, maybe a regional, maybe a super regional. At some point, the LSU baseball coach looked in the mirror, and it was everything but a wrestling promotion. And all you other baseball players across America looking for name, image, likeness, daughters, you need to come to Baton Rouge too. And they started playing music, and he walked off with a boa around his neck. And so maybe, like, that's what it is. He's just going blatant, and we need D-tackles. And then, like, Chuck will go on the air and talk about it, and somebody in the Times-Picayune will write about it. Matt Moscone will mention it, and so everybody will know, oh, yeah, we'll get around. Woo, he's looking for tackles. And then Bear Alexander will either transfer to LSU or use that to get more money to stay where he is. So I mentioned earlier today that the position, it shifted. It was three spots that were way predictable. And now it's shifted over to defensive tackle. And I think what, like, Price has also driven some of this. And so coaching staffs, you have to if you have a budget. Coaching staffs are trying to – what you want to get impact for as few dollars as possible, or you want the most impact for whatever dollars you are spending. So you're looking – in the NFL, they've done this for you. Do you know what, 10, 12 years ago? Now, nothing's cheap now in the NFL. Nothing. No position. Guards. Guards were where you could still get, and Steve Hutchinson was a guy to Michigan who then went on to, like, I don't know, seven all-pro teams. Just an unbelievable player. He's a guard, like a real guard that you spent a first-round pick on. People didn't spend first-round picks on guards. Then teams started realizing, guard's one of those, like, four spots on the field. Maybe safety's one. Where we can pay a guy less, but we know he's actually as important. And then all that stuff catches up. Quarterback automatically became Bryce Young. Who was it? David Shaw at Stanford saying the Alabama quarterback's getting $1 million and never even started the game. How can that be anything other than recruiting? Now, he was right. But all he did, we all knew that. Nick Saban's, what was the number? 1.6 million? And Nick Saban's like, yeah, why don't you sign just half those, go play some games and let that value go up. It's my understanding, my belief, my opinion of what happened. And then Bryce Young played a couple of games, and then his numbers went up. Shaw was talking about Bryce Young, the Alabama quarterback, as soon as name, image, likeness debuted. Who was the Stanford head coach talking about? Not the Alabama guard. Not the Alabama safety. Not the Alabama, certainly, defensive tackle. He's talking about the Alabama quarterback. As soon as name, image, likeness. Now, think back in your mind. July, what, 1st, 2021? Name, image, likeness is, all right, y'all off and running. Do you remember the first deal we all heard about? Who was it? What position did he play? Is De'Aaron King. De'Aaron King got the gym thing for $6,000, and then he got a couple of other endorsements. De'Aaron King, who wound up having an underwhelming season, and there was injuries, but he was never as good as he was early before he had two pretty big injuries. So De'Aaron King was a quarterback, and so this was easy. We can pay kids now. Well, let's pay quarterbacks. Then that got priced out, and it shifted to running back, surprisingly. And then edge rushers. And so now it's kind of come inside. I've mentioned how Jared Verse or the kid Latu from UCLA or Dallas Turner, one of them I think is going to be the first pass rusher drafted. He may not be the best defensive, like the most impactful guy was Byron Murphy. Out of those three, plus Byron Murphy, the tackle, Murphy, he's probably a better player. He's a tackle. Nobody looks at tackles. You know why? Because they don't accumulate numbers that we understand. Quarterbacks do. Running backs do. And so if I own a lumber store or a truck stop or whatever, maybe I just get mailbox money. Daddy was rich, and so the 15th and the 30th, all I got to do is go to the mailbox. Maybe I'm that guy. And so I've got money to donate to my program, and I don't really know anything about football, though, but I want to seem involved. Get the quarterback. And so those two positions, well, the budget-minded program and head coach and whoever's in charge of your collective, they made a switch, man. So this is all defensive tackles right now. This is what's driving it, ground zero. And so I think Brian Kelly, I think he did the exact same thing that the baseball coach did. He looked into the camera and he was like, "We need tackles, and Baton Rouge is where you need to come." I think Bear Alexander is actually showing himself to be quite savvy. I gave Luther Burden kudos in the moment. He was the first kid I saw, not even to the sidelines after the final snap. "Luther, are you returning?" And he played the game. "I don't know if I'll return." 24 hours later, Luther is tweeting out about he's staying at Missouri and buy these potato chips that I endorse. I was like, God bless. Is he a marketing major? Because he's got it figured out. He's 18. He's a true freshman. He played 12 games in the SEC. He's like, "Yeah, I don't know." Next day, he's like, "Yeah, I know. I'm staying." Credit Bear Alexander. Oh, folks, why were y'all talking about me switching schools? No. So that's where we sit. What up, Heath?
Well, obviously, keep an eye on everything going on portal-wise. And, you know, look, this is going to come out over the next couple of weeks, so we'll see where the trends go long term. But one thing that's been interesting so far today, Chuck, you've had multiple kids from Louisville go into the portal, and that by itself is not all that interesting. What is interesting is that two of the kids that have gone in are kids that transferred to Louisville in January. So basically, you've got a guy here in Ruben Inouye, transferred after spending 4 years at Houston. Was a guy who came in with a ranking of fourth among American Conference tackles, according to PFF, so seemed to be a pretty good pickup for them, but now is on the move again after the spring. They've also got a tailback that, again, the credentials seem pretty good. Penny Boone, 2023 MAC Offensive Player of the Year, rushed for 1,400 yards, 15 TDs last year, transferred in January, and after one spring in Louisville, these guys are on the move. And so the question here is, are they on the move because somebody made promises and didn't live up to them that got them there in the first place, or on the move because somebody said, "Well, look, if they gave you, we'll just say 200, we could give you 500, whatever it might be. This is really interesting that you've got two pretty high-profile guys that either didn't find what they were looking for playing time-wise, financial-wise, or somebody said, "We could just drop a bigger bag than Louisville can handle." I am really curious to find out what the answer is to that question over the next few days.
And there's two aspects that aren't getting a whole lot of run here, and I don't know on the pie graph what percentages these operate. First of all, when you transfer, you still have to go work and earn and beat somebody out. There's always going to be two or three or four or five other people at that same spot. So you show, oh, I'm transferring because I'm second or third string, or I started. But you showed up, and there's another transfer. He's like, yeah, I started too. And that's what happened with the running back I saw. They think it's a, like he wasn't necessarily going to get all the run that he got last year. So he may be on the move is the thought. The other thing is schoolwork, like grade work, like accumulating credits. There is something that most of us had done at some point. We've traded in a car, and you lose a lot when you trade in that car. One thing I never did that I know some people did, a lot fewer of us, is if you ever transferred schools, you don't take all your classes with you. There's just basically, I don't know, if you go from University of Texas to UT Arlington, okay, maybe everything transfers. A lot of places, when you transfer schools, especially if you go from Washington State to Missouri to Arizona to Michigan, you lose credits. And I've always said one thing that college athletics did, not for every kid and certainly not for enough, but I promise, I know for a fact, I personally know people who this happened to. Heath, you can chime in if you want to. I don't want to lead you anywhere, but if you know an example, but I know individuals who, and I'll say this, quote, stumbled their way into having a college degree. Not because they would have never gone to school is what I'm saying. Either their background financially or their care about school or their confidence that they could do something like graduate from college. And in pursuit of staying eligible and in pursuit of turning pro and it not happening, suddenly they look up and go, oh, I got a degree. And all of a sudden, you can change your family tree. I've seen that happen. You go to three, four schools in 5 years or 4 years or 3 years, and you just get frustrated. Like, I think the portal is sort of a bubbling under reason that there are going to be fewer guys, quote, stumbling their way into potentially a life-changing college degree. I mean, Heath, this is not foreign to you, is it?
No, and it is a shame that you're right. There probably are some guys in the pursuit of some NIL money in the short term, which will help that they may be costing themselves opportunity long term. And the other thing too, Chuck, is that even if you do get that degree, it's one thing if you kind of stumble into that degree and you do it all in one place at a state school and people have a lot of fond memories for you.
Yep.
It's a whole other deal if you stumble into that degree, but you stumble into that degree with 1 year here, 2 years there, 1 year there. You're just not remembered the same. You don't have that same level of connections unless you are some kind of really spectacular player for that 1 year. I've known lots of guys, and I know you have too, through the years that have benefited immensely from their status as, yeah. Oh, yeah, this guy is a pharmaceutical representative now, but I remember when he was sacking quarterbacks for good old State U. If you only have 1 year where you maybe had four sacks, you don't get that benefit of the doubt the same way.
Yeah, it's currency. And there's folks I know, like, that I work with, that it is based on what I did 25, 30, 35, 40 years ago, and it's hard to do that in one season. But if I could have gone somewhere, you know, lower level on scholarship, but I chose to walk on at Arkansas, and then I earned a scholarship, and then I started in 90 and 91, yeah, it's like 35 years later, and people are like, oh, yeah, that's that guy. Boy, he loved the Hogs. We love him. I'll buy some insurance from you. And you get the degree. It's just it's a really different – and by the way, convincing a 20, 21, 22-year-old of that, yeah, very, very difficult. All right, we're going to take a break and continue next.
College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week long, here's our college football on Chuck Oliver Show. And people don't have depth anymore. Just doesn't happen. And if you do have depth, then somebody will come along and poach it. I have been impressed with some of the either accomplishments, I'll say, Brent Key has made at Georgia Tech since he's taken over, but some of maybe just the appearances. I don't know. Spring game, appearances, whatever. I think Georgia Tech may have some depth. I don't know that. And there are so many other things that sound exciting than, hey, we may have some depth. Let me tell you, a coach gets really, really excited about having that might be the case, especially compared to recently there. I want to welcome on now from Jackets Online. He knows what it's about when it comes to Georgia Tech. It's a rivals thing. Kelly Quinlan, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Chuck. How you doing?
Nothing but good. Let's talk about the spring game. Bunch of yards, and it wasn't just Haynes King. Let's start with the quarterbacks and work through how the offense did what they did on Saturday.
Sure. Haynes got a couple of series. They scored, I think, on two of them, and then he had a weird interception on a tipped ball. This was kind of a fluky good play by a DB. Tipped it to another teammate and picked it off, but he was sharp. Zach Pyron looked really good. His arm strength's gotten better. You can see the progression come in there with him a little bit as he gets, you know, into his third year of college. So that was super exciting to see. You know, I feel like they have two guys who could start games in the ACC very comfortably now. And then Aaron Filo and Graham Knowles both showed what they could do a little bit as well. So the two true freshmen who, you know, both should redshirt and not play this year. But, yeah, it's the first time they've had, like, a real quarterback room that goes that deep in a really long time. And it was something I joked about with Brent Key after the spring game because it was kind of funny.
All right, we'll get to Coach Key's pride and joy later, but the wide receiver room, wow, there's depth there too.
Yeah, they got Leo Blackburn back. They got Chase Lane back. Chase Lane was a transfer from Texas A&M who played a lot there. He got hurt in, like, the second game of the season last year and tried to come back, just wasn't himself. And he looked good. What was really interesting is there's a guy, a walk-on named Bailey Stockton, who's a guy that they love from down, I think, in southeast Georgia. And he looked really good. And he was a guy they bragged on. He broke, I think, his wrist in fall camp last year and ended up not being able to really play. And then he looked great in the spring game, and they had a walk-on named Chris Elko who had, like, the greatest day of his life in the spring game with, like, five catches for, like, 200 yards and two touchdowns or something like that.
Mention Eric Singleton just a little bit because most people, if you mention that name to them, they wouldn't know who he was, much less that he led a Division I team in receiving and he's just a kid. What makes his game good?
He catches the ball and he gets open. Just elite speed. You know, not a guy that's going to maybe beat guys off a huge press at the line or something like that. He can get a little bit lost with a big physical corner at times, but that should come to his game as he gets older. But just has a knack for getting open. He's got slot speed on the outside, and he's really dynamic. You can line him up in different ways. He could run the ball really, quite frankly, as a running back. He can return punts and kicks. They haven't done a lot of that with him to protect him so far, but he's just very dynamic and, you know, hit that freshman wall last year. He got hurt in the game and kind of tailed off in the second half of the season a little bit compared to how he was planning to start. But I think he has tremendous upside and they're really excited about that kid.
All right. Talk about the offensive line, because that's what he is. That's what he was. Brent Key, that's, you know, you always look. I always wondered when Will Muschamp never got the safeties fixed at South Carolina. I was like, really? Tell me about the offensive line.
That's been, you know, the building block. They tried to kind of skip steps with Jeff Collins and take transfers and get a little too ahead of themselves. And Brent kind of went back to the basics. They're recruiting guys. They go and find, like, one or two pieces here and there. They added Keelan Rutledge from Middle Tennessee State, who missed the spring with a foot injury, but he'll be their right guard. But other than that, it's been guys they've all developed within their system. They have, you know, a true freshman playing left tackle in the spring game because Corey Robinson tweaked his ankle and they just held him out. They're like, we have enough depth to let this guy play. And Jameson Riggs did a great job for them. They are probably nine deep on the offensive line where you would feel comfortable starting a guy in a game. And I've literally never seen that. I've covered Georgia Tech since, what, 2009? Not seen anything close to this amount of depth on the offensive line. So I think it's really impressive what Coach Key, Jeep Wade, and them have built on this offensive line in, you know, 2.5 years, basically.
All right. There were a couple of Saturdays where I looked at the defense and I was like, Okay, all right, I see something. Most of the Saturdays, it was just bad. And Brent Key did not screw around. Overhauled the staff, new players, some returners, freshmen, a little something for everybody. Will they be better on defense?
Yeah, I think that the scheme's better. It makes more sense what they're doing. They have, you know, Jess Simpson's a really big deal. They brought him in as a defensive line coach, coach for the Falcons, just known as a great, like, X's and O's guy that will get the most out of guys. And they got him. They got Kyle Pope to coach the outside edge guys. Tyler Santucci, the new defensive coordinator, is a really strong guy as a X's and O's guy and really respected. And, I saw the difference watching them in the spring, like just the attention to detail in practice, like the run fits, all of the things that have been sort of their bugaboo the last 5 or 6 years on defense. That's the things they're hyper-focused on fixing. And if you just become average, right?
Yep.
They jump from wherever they were at the bottom of the league to the middle, then you're going to be pretty good. You should win 8 or 9 games, like, with the offense they're going to have.
All right, last thing, 30 seconds. How much shopping will Georgia Tech and Brent Key do over the next 2 weeks?
They need defensive linemen. They need a defensive end, rush end type, and maybe a cornerback to fill out the depth there. Those are the main spots, maybe a receiver or a skill guy on offense. That's what they're going to be shopping for, but really the 2D linemen is the biggest thing right now.
And just the hoops program with Damon Stoudemire as well. They got cash now, name, image, likeness. It's flowing a little more.
Yeah, they're doing better. I mean, they're 13th in our rankings for this next cycle. They have a tremendous freshman class coming in. They're out trying to fill out the rest of the team. And kids really like Damon and are responding to him. So that's half the battle right there.
Kelly, appreciate the expertise, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chuck.
Jackets online. Go get him there every single day. That's Rivals.com. Kelly Quinlan. I'd mentioned this, Josh Pastner. Kelly told us this, that his last year at Tech, he had literally $0, like no dollars of a name, image, likeness. None. And so that obviously needed to change in football as well. But you got to make it count, because you're just not going to have as much. So it's a struggle. And when you don't have the same, well, also your alumni base, they graduate and may live in Paris or Japan or somewhere versus maybe who will stay more local.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Buddy of mine back in the day, panic phone call. He's a Jacksonville Jaguars fan. And if you go back and look, you can find a reference to this somewhere. I don't know, late 90s, 98, 99. They got real good really quick after they were founded, and then they got into salary cap trouble because they got real quick, really good really quick. What's the NFL going to do? We're way over the cap. I was like, they'll start voiding contracts. Like, no team has ever played an NFL season over the cap. The closest they ever got, Jacksonville got threatened. The NFL, and that's how I found it out. The NFL's like, we will void contracts. We will start cutting players loose. You will get under, and then Jacksonville figured it out. Update it to earlier this week. We need tackles. This is a buddy of mine's LSU fan. We need these tackles, and we're already over the limit. We got like 88 players or 89 players. And I was like, this is going to work itself out. You're going to have like 30 enter the portal. So this is not no panic. You're way over the total, and you need to add. You're going to have plenty of guys take off. That is just the reality. I want to welcome on right now to work through the math and everything else involved with how LSU is going to add defensive tackles when they're already over the 85 limit. I want to welcome on right now from On Three at Shea Dixon. Shea, welcome back, friend. How you been?
I've been good. Thanks for having me.
Is it this simple that LSU's going to add some tackles and they're going to see a bunch of kids leave through the portal? And so the math, it works itself out now, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be to the 85-man limit that the NCAA sets on scholarships by fall camp. So every team out there is jockeying, kind of going over and under the limit during the spring, and hopefully you get it all cleared up by the summer. I've got LSU right now at 88. They had one kid already enter the portal, Jackson Howard. He's the only one officially in the portal, but came down from Minnesota, signed a year ago, and then took a redshirt. Now he's in the portal. Not a big shock there. He was going to be in line for another backup role. So that was sort of some expected attrition, and certainly given that he announced he would do it. But in that first window, I will say, they had 14 guys enter the portal. They only took five in that time, six total now, because they've added a grad transfer out of Wisconsin, a defensive tackle, as you noted, position they very much need. But I don't think it'll be as heavy, you know, this time around, but certainly they'll easily get under that 85, which then allows you to continue to add, you know, a handful more guys.
Yeah, you used in the old days, like 5 years ago, you had to run kids off. Hey, can you actually blue shirt or gray shirt, or can you show up in January? We don't have room for you. Now you're like, yeah, we're going to have so many kids portal. It's not a big deal. A little bit of old business. And you mentioned the transfer from Wisconsin. He comes in about a month ago or so. Interesting was in the actual first window of the portal back, you know, end of the year, beginning of the year, LSU didn't get any of those tackles. Just out of curiosity, maybe anecdotally, do you remember anybody that LSU was playing footsie with, that tackle that they just maybe they finished second for? Because I can't imagine they didn't try to get tackles.
Yeah, they had kicked the tires with a number of guys, and they landed elsewhere. And it really wasn't that deep of a group when it came to kind of what LSU was looking for, which is guys who are veterans, could come in, have a lot of experience, such as Gio Paez coming from Wisconsin has, Philip Bleedy, who just is coming from Indiana. He played at Texas Tech as well. Another grad transfer, he just visited LSU this past week. He's played a ton of football. So they're looking for those guys who can step in and replace the void left by, and look, in their system, they only play two defensive tackles, whether it be a nose and a DT or two DTs. And it was Mason Smith and Mekhi Wingo a year ago. Then they mixed in Jordan Jefferson, who was a transfer out of West Virginia. That became kind of the three-man rotation, and all three of them are gone. They're all going to enter the NFL draft or have entered the NFL draft, and we'll see how things play out for them on that level. But LSU only returned two scholarship defensive interior defensive linemen. One, Jacobian Guillory. He's expected to be a starter now. He's a vet who's got three starts during his career but has played in 30-plus games. And the other is Jalen Lee, who was at Florida, transferred back to LSU, and then played a backup role to all those guys a year ago. So, yes, your LSU buddy is right, and Brian Kelly said it. When he looks at the transfer portal, the number one thing LSU is looking for is DTs. The caveat to that is that that's the same answer a lot of coaches out there are going to give you. A lot of teams are looking for DTs.
All right, we're going to switch around and just talk about general impressions and feel and et cetera. It's been a couple of years that there's been a vision of a transition to Garrett Nussmeier. Okay, we're here. What is the idea? Like, if this offense goes the way they want to on the offensive staff there, what does it look like? What's the Garrett Nussmeier offense look like?
I think it hopefully looks a little bit like the spring game, 7-for-7, before they gave him a seat in the second quarter and let the rest of the guys do their things. But I think it'll be very much the LSU pass game will look similar. The run game will not, right? Because Jaden Daniels was the run game by and large a year ago. Garrett Nussmeier can run, but that's not his game. So they have worked hard on with the O-line, doing a number of different, installing a number of different kind of run plays and different sets that they feel like will kind of spark things there. And they've got Caleb Jackson coming back after a big freshman season. They've got a vet in Josh Williams. They've got Trey Holly on the roster, and then Caden Durham, one of the top 10 running backs in the country, coming in. And freshmen have played early, especially when Frank Wilson has been the running backs coach. So I think that the offense will look a lot like it did last year in terms of the passing attack. The two things that will look different is they'll use the tight end a lot more, so get used to Mason Taylor's name every single Saturday as he heads into his junior season. And then the running game, I think that they'll not be a 50-50 split maybe, but run the ball a whole lot more with the running backs than they did a year ago with Jaden at quarterback, obviously.
Kyren Lacy just going to abuse people this year?
Their hope is that he's that guy who steps up and replaces Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas or however you want to slice it. But, yes, he has looked very good this spring. And another guy who's returning and I would say has looked second best is Chris Hilton, who's finally healthy and was a star coming out of high school but just battled injury for a couple of years. Those are two kind of top guys. Aaron Anderson has looked good down here. And then two transfers that they took who came here knowing, hey, look, I've got a shot to play with two guys leaving and becoming first-round picks. And that's C.J. Daniels out of Liberty and then Xavion Thomas out of Mississippi State. Thomas is a Louisiana native. I mean, a lot of people thought that they should have pushed for him out of high school. Yeah, they went to Starkville and, look, he had 500 yards receiving last year on a team that couldn't throw the football, which, you know, was a shock, obviously, in the post-Leach era. But he can return the ball on punts, and LSU is just punted on punts, for lack of a better term, the past few years because they, Malik Nabers first in that FSU game, and then it was Aaron Anderson, fumbled some punts, and they decided, you know what, we're going to put a guy out there in Greg Clayton who will just fair catch it every time, turn around and hand it off to Jaden Daniels. And when you've got Jaden Daniels in the number one offense in America, that works. They don't anymore, so I think that Thomas will be big in the punt game. And then Daniels is one of only two receivers who hit the portal, Macklin, who went from North Texas to Kentucky, being the other, who had over 1,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns last year. So they think in Daniels, they got a guy who can put up big-time numbers and coming from that Jamie Chadwell offense into the SEC.
All right, I've been enamored with Shelton Sampson, the aesthetics of it. I was like, this looks right. This is going to work. And so I texted a buddy of mine on Friday ahead of the game. I was like, how's my guy Shelton Sampson looking? He's like, your guy's running sixth. Wither, the bottom part of the depth chart at wide receiver, is that Shelton Sampson? Is he sixth? Is he seventh? Is he, what, does he have a role?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the aforementioned guys I mentioned or talked about. You know, I probably ran through six guys that are certainly going to be out there and getting a lot of playing time. And then you toss in a freshman in that same class as Sampson and Kyle Parker, who's getting first team run at
That's
times
right.
As a former first four-star
That's right.
out of Texas. Man, Sampson is just, he got into one game last year, dropped both passes they threw to him, and then he just, when we got to watch during the spring, we never saw anything pop, and you didn't hear any much about it. So whether it's one of those things where he buckles in and says, hey, look, I need to find a way to work my way up the depth chart with a strong summer and a strong fall camp, because, look, they're bringing in another class of receivers with a top 100 signee in Kylan Billiott coming out of Louisiana, four stars. So more competition arrives this summer beyond just transfers. I think a lot of people are watching this portal window to see if a guy like Shelton dips his toes into that water or does he stay put, because more often than not, the guys you're losing, and we saw it with the first portal window, is attrition, natural attrition, guys who aren't expected to play. Yeah. If Sampson finds himself kind of thinking that, or, hey, I may be further on the depth chart than I like, then it fits into that category. But when the fans see it, it really stings that you say, man, we're, if a guy like that enters from Baton Rouge after a year, I wish he would have stuck around and kind of really developed his game. So kind of that's where we're at right now for every college, right? When you look at a spring portal window.
Oh, just reality, yeah.
Is, yeah, guys can look around and say, I'm this on the depth chart. Maybe I should take a look elsewhere.
All right, last thing, Shade Dixon from On3, and you work, I just said from On3, you work for them. You don't work for any agent or any, you know, agent's office or anything like this, but I just want some insight here because suddenly Malik Nabers is an attitude problem. Like, it's a week and a half before the draft, and there's these, you know, word coming out. Now, here's the thing. I've always said, if you're in a college town, like you mentioned Starkville, Baton Rouge, Auburn, if word gets out to everybody that you're a pain in the neck, you must really be a pain in the neck. I've never heard anything really about Malik Nabers having an attitude problem. I heard about the thing at Mardi Gras with the gun in his pants, and he was like, I was stupid. I can't believe I did that. I've never heard that he's an attitude problem. And then suddenly there's this talk before the draft. What's the lowdown on him?
Yeah, I mean, publicly, that was the only sort of negative thing we'd ever heard about Malik Nabers was, as you mentioned, at Mardi Gras when he was approached by a police officer who asked him if he was carrying a gun, and he said yes, and then it ended up being dropped, and then it was kind of a part of a Mardi Gras thing where a lot of people's guns were just taken, and if you had them registered, you got it back, and Brian Kelly had a talk with him, and they moved on. But I had never heard one rumble come out. We knew him in high school. He didn't even get to play a senior year of high school because he had transferred to a different school and then got ruled ineligible. He didn't let that set him back and went right to LSU and started to make a mark. And I go back to this. I was there every week. He knew I would be a top 15 pick, if not a top 10 pick. He played in the bowl game. He didn't sit out, and it wasn't the national championship. It was the Reliant Quest Bowl against Wisconsin down there. And, yes, it was because he said, hey, I want to go try to break the record for most receiving yards, but he also said, hey, I'm going to roll with my team, and then once I hit a record, I'll let the coaches decide on what's going to happen. And Brian Kelly came out after that game and said, at halftime, I told Malik, you've got the record. Now you are the most successful receiving yards and catches in LSU history. What a way to go out. And Malik fought him on it and said, no, I want to play in the second half. And Brian Kelly said, I basically had to make him take his jersey off and take his helmet away because he didn't want to come out of the game. So if I'm an NFL team, I'm buying stock in Malik Nabers. He is a difference maker.
Yeah, there's always that. I remember Patrick Mahomes suddenly before the draft at small hands. And I was like, as long as he has hands, like, that's all I care about. Like, this kid can play. Small hands, we may not want him. It's always these weird things that come out in the final, you know, days, it seems, for the draft. Shay, appreciate the insight, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
From the Bengal Tiger, it's an On3 thing, Shay Dixon. So, yeah, Malik Nabers, I heard that, what is today, Tuesday? I heard that yesterday from someone. I was like, I haven't heard that. You know, on the field, he'll let you know about it a little bit. Wasn't that on the field, he'll tell you about it? And then Brian Thomas, wasn't he the opposite? Brian Thomas just kind of handed the ball back and then went to the huddle. I just said huddle. He went back and looked on the stone tablet. Yeah, but that's different. That's on the field. I had never heard, and I said, I've never heard anything about this. Oh, yeah, he may drop in the draft. Yeah, I don't know. Do Roma Dunze and he have different agents? Like, that's where my mind immediately went. So, all right, we will take a break. Come back, wrap up next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show. Phil Fulmer, at one point, I've never really gotten in people's faces. I've tried not to. I'm attacking you. I'm Inside Edition, just shoving mics in people's faces. I don't do that. And as Phil Fulmer about suspension after suspension after suspension, he had a punter. And I don't want to besmirch anybody, but I think it was the famous last name punter. And, like, the punter is not supposed to really have an alcohol-related anything or, you know, what you don't think first, and so there was something, so I was asking him about it. And it's another suspension. And he said, and I'll give him credit. He said, we don't, and I've used this phrase, buddy, I remembered it, and boy, is it true. We don't often learn from other people's mistakes. Normally, we got to learn from our own mistakes. Michigan started spring practice on a Monday, I don't know, a month and a half ago. And they weren't certain, couldn't tell you for sure who the defensive line coach was going to be. Denard Robinson, who obviously was Denard Robinson at Michigan, he's on the staff there now, and he got arrested yesterday for OWI, single vehicle crash. I will say, single vehicle, all right, we start counting, you know, against the backdrop of you'd been drinking and you got in a wreck, against the backdrop, like if we have to accept those things are true, all right, anybody else involved? No. Anybody hurt? No. What are the deets? Well, it was 3 a.m. and he was a mile from the football complex. This is a tough one because was it Chris Scruggs, I want to say, was the D-line coach who was not the D-line coach after that? Like, Denard Robinson, you got to get on out of here now. And it's tough because if it was Chris Scruggs, who I'm trying to remember, Chris Scruggs wasn't a Heisman finalist. Chris Scruggs didn't start 37 games. Chris Scruggs wasn't a first-team All-American, and he wasn't the Big Ten MVP. Denard Robinson was all of that stuff. So that's what matters to me today, brought to you by ThisStuffMatters.net. Full day on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Had Dave Bartu here from CFP Matrix. Kelly Quinlan was talking Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets after their spring game, and Shade Dixon from On 3 with LSU. Heath, what's up?
Well, some people might think we're piling on Michigan here, but the news is what it is, and just like the timing of it for the issue with Denard Robinson is one thing, this is also out of Michigan's control, but 3 years probation, a fine, and recruiting restrictions from the NCAA for 5 current or former staff members for recruiting violations during the COVID period. Now, again, this is important. This is not anything to do with the mess that came up during last season, the Connor Stallion stuff. There's nothing to do with that. This is just the old stuff about during the recruiting time where you were not supposed to have folks on campus, et cetera. This is an agreed-to deal. So Harbaugh has, from the beginning, made it very clear he has no intention of acknowledging he did anything wrong and would not cooperate. But this is a negotiated agreement with the 5 staffers that are cooperating or former staffers that are cooperating with this. So, again, 3 years probation for Michigan, a fine, and some recruiting restrictions, and especially probation. I'm sure people are like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever, guys, who cares? But it includes this, Chuck, quote, the violations demonstrated a head coach responsibility violation, and the former football head coach failed to meet his responsibility to operate with the investigation. So the case from this stuff against Harbaugh will continue, presumably with him saying, yeah, I'm not showing up. You guys can go jump in a lake. But then the question becomes, all right, if they can't do anything to Harbaugh, will the NCAA attempt to do something more consequential against Michigan? It's very clear that Harbaugh is never planning on coming back to college football again, so he doesn't care whether the NCAA sends him a nasty gram and says you're banned for all eternity or not. But will this carry over? Will the way that they got through last year with everybody knowing Harbaugh's intention was hit the door and basically leave the NCAA holding the bag, will they make an effort to enforce anything against Michigan? And, of course, at this point, even if they do, can they? Because it seems like everybody just goes to court and sues, and some judge says, nah, you can't enforce any rules anyway. It's not allowed. Is this a time where the NCAA could actually enforce something down the line? Who knows?
We're going to declare a 200-year show cause against Harbaugh. If you ever hire him, he's never coming back, so he doesn't. This is Terrell Pryor. I'm going to the NFL, so that suspension, it really doesn't work for me. Like, you're gone. Doesn't matter.
Well, here's the other part that's fascinating, Chuck. Remember when Jim Tressel went to the NFL in, like, a consultant role with the Colts there for 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that the NFL felt like they needed to suspend him, too, because of the perception that it was unfair that Terrell Pryor got punished by the NFL for college crap. So, therefore, how could Tressel not get punished? We haven't seen them do that since then. If you're Harbaugh, I mean, at some point under the NFL's precedent, theoretically, if you got hammered, you should have some kind of penalty. But I get the feeling the NFL is just going to sort of ignore that they did that because, frankly, it was really, really weird that they did.
Oh, absolutely it was weird that they did because, I mean, Reggie Bush didn't get suspended the first month of the season.
No, it never been like that. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, for Terrell Pryor, it was like a problem. And then, of all things, Tressel shows up, so they kind of felt like they had to do something to him, too.
Yeah. Reggie Bush's parents were allowed to go to the Saints games. Like, everything, it was all fine. Wraps it up on a Tuesday. David, wonderful job on the ones and twos today. Heath, Rolodex to the stars, doing what he does. Everybody, I appreciate y'all coming here. 22 hours from now, all of us and you and the guest will all be back together talking college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a Mad Men's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.